Okay. Well, first of all, welcome to the third international COMFAV3 panel. It's about awareness and adoption of GPLv3. I think the part of awareness is about awareness in the process, how this process is being, how the people can participate in this process and how this process is happening. But mainly awareness in the achievements that we plan to have after this this process and how to get there, and that's really important. And adoption is like adoption of the license per se, and how which work we have to do to get make GPLv3 keep being the same success in terms of free software license, the third generation of the most used free software license. We plan this panel to be a more interactive than the last one, so please prepare questions since the beginning, take notes while people are speaking, because we have like the half of the panel is interaction, so if there is no interaction, we'll be like, I don't like this unilateral stuff, and we agree that that's the best way, you know, talk with the people, because all of us here, we have an important role to play after this conference, that is to spread the information we got from you, we got while we are talking among ourselves, and to spread that outside this group, helping GPLv3 to be a success. So I will just pass the word to Annie now, and yeah, I will conclude on.
Hello, everybody. My name is Anne Østergaard. I'm a lawyer by profession. I come from Denmark. I've been active in the free software community since 1998, where my son introduced me to this community. And I can assure you that I have learned so much since then that it's amazing. Right now, I'm a vice chairman of the board of directors of the GNOME Foundation. And what I mainly work at back in Denmark is I fight software patents, have done so for the last 4 or 5 years or so. And I work very much for having open standards. And we have indeed in Denmark a definition of what is an open standard. It is on openstandards.dk, and we work, 10 organizations has endorsed this definition. Then I also work for more women in free software, and especially I work for the freedom of choice and the freedom rights a concept. And this GPL3 consultation, it is going to be not only a revolution within the software world, it's going to be a revolution for society and for democracy, because it is showing people that it is possible with this collaboration model to make international legislation agreements in the framework of the European Union. So it is showing people how to write directives, and the consultation period of 1 year, it's just about right, and we need to go home and tell in each of our countries that, listen guys, we are now halfway through this consultation, and you have had every possibility to participate, and then show people how it, this consultation is conducted. And especially show people the facilities, because I'm so amazed and I so admire this way it has been done with the colors, showing so many questions, light color, where it's really a problem area, then it gets darker and darker. And this is really, really amazing, and it is really making a model. So people who are good at organizing themselves and hackers are really good at organizing themselves. They can really change the world. We saw what has been done in the about the software patent directive in the European Union. We know, all of us, the work which has been done by the FFII, and it's amazing how we all have the same knowledge at the same time. You meet people and they are all up to date in what is the next step, what's going on. So really keep on the good work, and when I go home to Denmark, it's my intention to meet Kjaran O'Riordan to tell the community about the GPL version 3 procedure, because you know it's always more important to come when you have a guest star. So invite guest stars, be sure to have the press, be sure to have the lawyers, be sure to have the whole community, write articles in your newspaper, spread the word. That's my advice to you. Thank you very much.
Hello, good morning. I'm Alexandre Oliva. Can you hear me? Hello? Hello? Is this any good? Okay. Still works? No? Hello? Okay. I'll speak up. So I'm Alexandre Oliva, I'm Brazilian, I'm secretary for Free Software Foundation Latin America. I also work for Red Hat, developing all of free software. I've been a free software user for ever, maybe 15 years or so. I've been a free software developer for 13 years, a free software activist and evangelist for maybe 12 years. As for the topic that I should talk about today, what I have to say about awareness first has to do with reaching out for communities and reaching out outside communities as well. I assume that a number of people present here are affiliated with some community of free software development or users or something. I assume that people who are here will eventually take whatever they learn here about the GPL v3 changes, the process, how it works, to their communities, and this is good. But this is not enough. It is very important that every one of you take this to the communities and tell the other members of this community to reach out for outside the community. Take this word to other people who are also involved with free software and to other people who are not necessarily involved with the same community that you are. But take the GPL v3 word. Let people know that they can participate in this project. Let them know that this is being run in the same philosophy that free software projects are developed. People who are willing to participate, people who have knowledge or want to acquire the knowledge, are welcome to participate. Let them know about that, not only inside your own community. Let other members of your community know that we'd like them to tell people outside your communities that, if it makes sense. As for adoption, the good news is that for most projects, adoption of GPL v3 is going to be a non-issue. Most free software projects are licensed under the GPL version 2 or any newer version published by the Free Software Foundation, which means that any user can, at any time after the publication of the version 3, the user can choose the GPL version 3. Sorry. And that's good. And then from then on, that any derivative work from that copy is going to be licensed under GPL version 3. It is expected that most package maintainers may switch to GPL v3 as they wish. The big problem that we have, also projects that are not licensed under the GPL, but they are licensed under licenses that are compatible not with version 2, but with version 3. Those can switch, in a sense. They can integrate changes licensed under version 3 after it is published. And the combined work can then be licensed under the GPL version 3. So this is also an interesting effect of the compatibility clauses. The problem is for projects that are licensed under the GPL version 2 only. Those projects are at the risk of not being able to reap the benefits that GPL version 3 intends to offer. They're going to miss on some of the freedoms unless they take steps to correct that. And these steps are often not that difficult. Basically, you need every one of the copyright holders to agree to change the license. I'm not a lawyer, but I'm told by lawyers that this is the case. If they all agree with changing the license to GPL version 3, great, that's done. As it turns out, for one of the most prominent free software projects, its name is Linux, and unfortunately I have to be clear here that I'm referring to the kernel of the GNU, of the most common GNU operating system. For Linux, there is a bit of a problem because there are about 1,500 copyright holders. It is true that many of them actually license their changes under the GPL version 2 or above, but some of them, they prefer version 2 only. And some of them do so out of fear. Of what? I'm not sure. Some of them misunderstand some of the changes that are being proposed for version 3. Particularly, there are concerns about two issues that I'm going to talk about. One of them has to do with the definition of complete corresponding source code. As you probably have already been told during this conference, the definition is being clarified so as to avoid the TiVoization of free software. My take on it is that this is more of a clarification than an actual change. Originally, if you think about it, the idea was in version 2, it is said that for the source code is everything that is needed to create the binary, except for the compilers and base libraries, normally part of the operating system. So if you take into account that the binary is signed with has a signature attached to it, then in order to create the binary, you need the key used to generate the signature. So my take on it is that version 2 already stated that the key is part of the source code. Now this is being clarified, and some people seem to have problems with that, which is quite unfortunate. The other issue has to do with digital restrictions management. Again, people apparently don't get that this is just a clarification. If you think about it, digital restrictions management can and have always could be implemented in free software. It's just that they're not effective because the user gets access to the source code. So the user is free to change the program to, in a sense, decripple it. The user can add the features or remove the misfeatures that are introduced by whoever introduced the digital restrictions management features or misfeatures. So people who have issues with these clarifications, maybe they should not have adopted the GPL version 2 in the first place. I'm sure the world is a better place because Linux is licensed under the GNU GPL. But it can become an even better place if Linux switches to GPL version 3. Now, how the Linux developers can do that? That's the dead end that it's not a dead end. That's the bad place they got themselves into. They really have to get together and try to find a way to change the license. They have to agree, all of them, to switch to version 3 or above, ideally. Or they can right away switch to version 2 or above, such that when version 3 is published, anyone can switch. I wish they will come to their minds and do that. That was all. Thank you.
Okay, it's my turn now. My name is Gaudenz Steinli, and I'm a Debian developer, but to warn you, I'm not really deeply involved with all these licensing issues, but I'm also part of some Swiss free software groups or Swiss Linux user groups, and I know a little bit what's going on there. I'm briefly talking about awareness. I think in Debian, the main people are aware of the GPL version 3 process, and they are also quite active. So they are, to my knowledge, there are four persons involved in the committees. One of them is here, sitting back there. And what there was also one of the topics at the DevConf in Mexico this spring, and there was a talk about it. And somewhat astonished me was that there was not a really big discussion on the Debian mailing lists so far about the new version. Some problems were mentioned. I think most of them hopefully will be addressed in the next draft. The most disputed topic was about the DRM clause. There is some fear that there are clauses that would be too restrictive and would take away too much of the freedom. About adoption, it's quite difficult to say something about adoption before the final version is out. And on the other hand, if there's a problem and the final version is out, then it's quite bad. So I think the most important thing about adoption, especially regarding Debian, is to get all the concerns involved before the final version goes out. So I don't know exactly how to achieve this for sure, but I think the goal should be to really make sure that everybody that has an option to get now and not in January 2007. To the other perspective of what's going on in Switzerland, I think this is not only limited to Switzerland. I expect it to be quite similar in all other countries, but it's the thing I know. I think that the process so far has not really reached that much down to the users, the people only using free software. Most of them probably are not really aware of what's going on and are not aware of the changes. I think that this would be something that people should do something about, not only because it would be important, or I don't think the main thing is that it is important to involve these people, but the main thing is that the process is something you can use to make them aware of some other aspects of free software. To, for example, make them aware of the problems of DRM and how software licenses can be useful to do something about DRM, and how software licenses perhaps could be useful to do something against software patents. So, yeah, I think that could be something that, for example, by doing some talks that are clearly addressed to users to use this process and the chance of having this new version of the GPL to talk to them about other issues of free software.
Hello, my name is Manuel Martinez. I'm a lawyer, a practicing lawyer in Barcelona. I've written a book in relation to legal aspects of free software and the free documentation license. I'm also a reviewer in a European project for the study of the effects of software patents. It was originally a study to follow the directive that was to be passed. It still keeps on because of the facto situation of the European Patent Office and the practice in the European different countries. And I also help to private companies, public administration, and also organizations in between, like for example universities, to migrate or release their code. And from this I've learned that at least in this city, there are not many lawyers aware of the GPL, and even less aware from the version 3 of the GPL. Probably this is maybe for two reasons, I understand. One is maybe if we do a jump and we look at the developers, and some developers working under non-free software, developers working under free software, these last ones are probably more aware. But of course, if you also take into account that, at least up to date, we haven't had lawsuits with a big, high quantity of indemnity money, I'm talking of money. Sometimes lawyers, if they're not so interested in this business, if they don't have a mean to live out of this. So probably this has led me to see that not many lawyers in Barcelona really are aware of GPL, even version 3 of GPL. As Anne was saying, I will not go into this, but yesterday it was commented about the website of the Free Software Foundation with all these different colors in the license and all these different comments that can be posted. And I definitely think that it's really good. It's a really nice example that a lawyer can follow which are the concerns, not only from a legal perspective, but also from a technical point of view, which is really very interesting. As regards to adoption, I have to say that software patents, as currently being granted, are bad, but they have a good thing in the sense that they're good because they foster the GPL, the GPL version 3, I understand. Of course, it's a mechanism to fight software patents, which is quite ironical to say that software patents are good because they foster the use of GPL version 3. And then with all these new provisions to impose further requirements, let's say, I think it's a good thing because it obviously opens the scope of the compatibility, and I found many times how many problems do you find in all these communities, free communities, the startup, or they want to release their code, and you find all these incompatibilities, and because of the proliferation of licenses and compatibility between them. And I think it's a very nice thing, this opening of these further requirements, like not seen as really cutting the free right, right, but really as helping to make things easier, at least from a legal point of view. Of course, the license is basically written. It's an incredible license in the sense that a part of international treaties, I rarely have come across with contracts that try to be implemented in different jurisdictions. Of course, intellectual property rights are always territorial rights, and each country has different laws with different kind of specialties, details that are different, and sometimes also collapse, like the different free licenses sometimes are incompatible between themselves. I think this new move to try and find wider meanings of the word is a nice thing. However, the harmonization, yes, there is a harmonization under the Berne Convention, but there are other legal areas also covered in the GPL which go beyond copyright. Thinking, for example, liability issues, consumer issues, and this is a much tougher thing to solve because probably there is less harmonization. Yesterday it was, this discussed whether the GPL version 3 should only be in English. I think it's a good thing that it also includes other languages because it's not true that everybody really understands as well English, and sometimes I don't think it is such a problem, it's such a fear that one should have, because there may be a mistake in the translation of the license to another language. I think that, at least from my point of view, I think the fear is how a judge would interpret, would understand the meaning of those words. Because, I don't know, to put you an example, I honestly don't understand how a Spanish judge would understand what are consequential or punitive damages, probably something very clear under US law. So whether this word is translated into Spanish or not, I don't think it's the problem. The problem is how the judge will interpret, will give an interpretation of that word, because in the end, the license will have to be translated by a sworn translator in Spain. So probably the best is that there is one sworn translator, because I've seen many sworn translators and they all say different things for the same word. So I think that is a problem that should be thought about. And finally, I don't want to run the time, I wanted to, another point to take into account. I find out that many times developers, technical people, explain, no, I don't, obviously I do, always I accept the license, I don't have any idea really of what the license says, or I have a slight idea. So of course, because we want, the new version wants to address problems and to make things clearer, of course it's longer, and maybe this is a very positive thing, I think from a legal point of view it is, but sometimes it is a bad thing for the developer. He doesn't really want to read so many legalese and a longer license. And basically, these are the points I just wanted to point out for discussion.
Well, and now I will finish with my points, but first I will introduce myself. I will finish introducing myself. It's a bit funny, I forgot to do that. I'm Fernanda Weiden. I'm from Brazil. I've been working with the free software community since 2002. I'm a member of the AssociaçãoSoftwareLivre.org, which is the non-governmental organization responsible for the organization of the biggest conference, free software conference in Latin America. We had 5,300 people last year in our conference there. It's huge, big. And well, I got some points during yesterday. We were talking about, you know, what are we going to have in this panel, and I got the, in the end we had halfly the same points. So I was just listing some things that maybe was not the people didn't give a lot of emphasis, but I think they are important. A beginning for awareness. Once more, people here already said yesterday, but once more I want to point out that you don't need to be a specialist on licenses to participate in this process. The idea of GPLv3 also is, as was already said here, to change the language to make it more natural to normal people be able to understand what the license is about. Another thing is that any idea in the free software world, and I always use that to encourage people to participate more in the free software community, especially women, any idea that you have, if you think is a very small change, or it is a big change, even if it's really small, people can build upon this idea, and that's really important. That for less, for more, it's likely that the change you want to propose or the point you have to make, for more, you know, small detail it is, people can build other thing upon it. So everything is equally important. If you have ideas, if you have points to make, one phrase that you think would be better another way, there is no other way to get the license to address, and no other way to solve your own doubts if you don't put your ideas out. No idea is bright if it only lives inside your head because nobody can access it. About adoption, I only wanted to add that Alexandre said that the key stuff and the DRM stuff were already somehow in GPLv2, but was completely implicit, you know. And I think making the things explicit, like drawing the line where about these issues is very, very important to not let, because if you lack information, you give more room to misunderstanding and misleading when people think about using the GPL, as it happens in the case of TiVo, for instance. That is not really violating the license, but is violating the freedom as the GPLv2 is. We have to think also how to avoid another Linux cases, which is like a huge misconception that became big because of just misunderstanding. And in the end, it creates, it's bad for our community. I got, for these years that I'm working with different issues, and the GPL is not different, we see that our community lose a lot of time fighting among themselves. And that's bad for everybody, you know. And most of the cases, a conversation would solve the problem. So it's important if you hear, I participate in this mode, I'm not very active, but I have a package on Debian. I use it to have more, but it's only one left. I participate on Debian Women and other communities in Brazil. Punctually, I give some help in different projects. But if you go to this mailing list where you participate and, you know, send email there, let's bring up these issues and let's talk with the people. What's your opinion? Do you agree that, you know, do you think there is any problem? Because there is no other way to clear the misconception if we don't talk about them. Well, adoption of the license, I just pointed here that adoption of the license is not a work to be done when the license is ready. It's a work that we have to do since today, since, you know, since the project of the open discussion began, because if we let all this, you know, rumors spread far away, will be more difficult to catch up afterwards. And another and the most important thing is, doesn't matter if, now we are talking about the ERM, we are talking about parents, and it's important to people to understand that all these things, what we are doing is trying to protect the freedom of our users. Nobody here is trying to restrict. We are not fighting to, you know, well, let's make everybody publish the secret keys on web. That's not what we are, that's not the intention. The intention is protect the freedom of the users, and we have to address these new issues that didn't exist at the point that GPL V2 was released. And so therefore I think the best thing to say is, like, why we have to deal with DRM, why we have to deal with the patents, because free software was an idea that is an idea, and these concepts are incompatible, and that there is no only license to restrict the user's freedom, and we have to think about all these issues all the time. Is spreading what is free software about, what is freedom in the digital age about, is also spreading awareness about the GPL V3. And yeah, let's go to the questions now. Thank you.
If I could follow up on what you said.
The discussion will start here.
Yeah, I guess so. As for patents, one of the changes, there are at least four changes in GPL V3 Draft 1 regarding patents, and one of them is actually yet another clarification. It has always been the understanding of the FSFs that when you license a program under the GNU GPL version 2 and you hold a patent on something that a program implements, you're actually licensing the patent as well. And that's because the license says that you're not going to stop the user from doing from using the four freedoms that a license grants. So this is yet another clarification again. The other point is about translations. Although I do see a lot of value in translations, I don't share the opinion that the right way to address the problem is with a translation of the license. A translation of the license creates, in a sense, another license that is potentially incompatible. I think the best way to deal with this is to have translations, yes, but commented translations. Translations done by professional translators, along with lawyers who understand the original license in its original context and the local laws, such that not only a direct translation of the text is written, but also explanations of some words that may not necessarily carry the complete meaning that was originally intended. So that a committed translation would be a better approach.
Can I answer to this second thing? When I meant a translation, I mean a literal translation, not a modification of the license. Sometimes, like for example, if you look at the European public license, then it's different. I mean, definitions and the obligations, how it's settled, it is a different license. Therefore, it is an incompatible license. What I'm saying is the problem that may cause, if you only have the license in English, when you have the problem in a Spanish scope or in another country, because we're talking of territorial rights, you will need a small translator. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine 10 different lawsuits with 10 different sworn translations. So what I mean, if you really have one official or recommended, at least, and which is being studied and like of many interpretations, at least you narrow the problems. I don't mean I say it in this sense, but I don't mean a translation to translate, like, for example, what is the distribution right on the European or the Spanish law, whether you have to include or not other rights. I don't mean it in that sense. I mean, use, like, if you use words like propagation, well, maybe propagación, you know, maybe this, you come to the same sense. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, I understand, I agree. It's just, I feel that I need more than just a translation to carry the same meaning. The comments, the explanations that are not direct translations are important to say the same thing that the original license does.
And I just...
So I have just a question about the clarification. So you think that if it comes to a Spanish court, you always need a Spanish translator. And so it's better to have one for all the court cases than one different for every case.
No, in Brazil at least we had a lot of this discussion about having a translated GPL, but in Brazil a license is a contract. When you decide to use the software, at least in the GPL V2, it says that you accepted the license, and if you accepted, you cannot use the excuse that I couldn't read, you know, because you have access to an official translation. Once you run the software, you accepted the contract in English. And usually, the cases in the court don't go to say that the GPL is invalid. The cases in the court are about people violating GPL, so I don't see that as an issue, but I just wanted to, you know. It's a contract between two parties, and if you use the software, at least in the GPL V2, you are accepting that contract, and the language is not a really big issue.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Harald Welte. I'm working with the GPLviolations.org project, and we've actually had at least preliminary injunctions and appeals cases against preliminary injunctions in Germany, and the courts did use the original English version. They did not require an English translation.
Yeah.
That's something that I was totally startled about. So they didn't even bother, you know, demanding an official translation.
Yeah, I knew about this case. That's a good example of that this can work, you know, and it's something that we don't know until it happened in every country. It's something that we don't know about, so I think we have to focus, like, finding solution for the problems. I'm sure that we have to ensure that the GPL will be the best it can be, but the problems has to be addressed as they appear, you know. It goes to court and it's a big case. We can go to the FSF and say, you know, I need you to help me here, because when we go to the law discussions, they will want a translation, and I want, you know, we need to work together to provide a translation that would mean the same thing the English version mean in Portuguese, but we can work on demand. I don't think we should, you know, that's my opinion. I don't know.
I think there is a place for translations that perhaps aren't legally binding, so that developers or just the person who's developing code can read the license. There's a lot of people whose native language isn't English understand more or less the idea of the four freedoms, but don't read it because it's hard work. You know? To have a translation that isn't legally binding, but perhaps conveys what you were saying. Maybe that's intuitive. Possible.
I have two questions on the one on the translation and one on GPL V3 as part of any later version, automatic adoption. The question on translation is whether a translation that's official exegesis of the translation but not a legally binding document could be what in Spanish is called acto propio, or whatever is in English. You know, something that's not a legal document, a contract, but by doing something, you signal intention. Could it jeopardize, really, that if it says something by some kind of mistake that's different? And what could it do to compatibility? And the second thing is, I'm sure you have a study. How many of GPL projects have actually chosen GPL V2 or any later version and you know, how important is this in terms of automatic exceptions? We know the kernel Linux isn't, and that's a famous example, but which projects are? And
Infamous example.
It's his code. I mean, he can license it any way he wants.
So for homework questions, did you ask questions to any person in mind? Or? Yeah, I confess that I didn't quite understand all the terms that he used in your question, so I don't feel qualified to answer.
I would like to add a comment for clarification. That is that at the end, when we have the final version, there will be an extensive frequently asked questions and FAQ, so you can get help there, and there will definitely be mailing lists. I have also heard people saying at the beginning of this whole process, oh, but you know Richard Stallman is going to decide what should be the final version anyhow. But as we heard Eben Moglen telling us yesterday, he said that they had had about 1,000 comments, and they were all real substantial and really clever comments, and that when we have the version 2, some of those people who had made those comments, they can recognize their own language, their own ideas in this version. And it's right that in the end it's Richard Stallman who has the final say, but you know, he cannot demand on anybody to use the version 3 of the license. It is because the community has trust that in the kind of quality of this work that it can function. We have to remember this. Thank
you. I think to also answer your question a little bit more, as far as I know, most GPL projects use the and any version, any later version clause. I think mostly this is also due that this is the default. If you just copy the example text, then it's in. But also what you said, so those people, they don't have the chance to choose if they want to adopt it or not. They automatically adopt it. And they could only avoid it if they have the chance to change it now. I hope they won't do that. And to the, you said there will be an FAQ. I'm not so sure if the FAQ is really helpful in these cases. It may be helpful in some cases where it's really only a misunderstanding to clarify that. But I think those people, especially those people objecting some new clauses, won't trust the FAQ. They will say it has to be inside the license and it has to be clear there, and we won't trust any FAQ that isn't legally binding.
Your question exactly was it about developers reading the license and understanding it so much as it was about any court cases needing a document that establishes intent of the running of the license of the person who is the developer.
Could you please repeat your question with the microphone?
The question was more directed that the FAQ effectively is good for developers to understand what they're getting into when they use the GPL v3 license, but it may not be a document that's good in a court of law, where what is needed is some kind of official interpretation of what the writers of the license meant by writing it and what the developers meant by using it for the code. So maybe some kind of official translation that's not the legally binding document, but they send exegesis for the courts in each jurisdiction could be a solution. I don't know about that, but I wanted to ask the lawyer in the panel.
There are two actually.
I think yes. I do agree to your position. That I agree from the point of view that I think it will narrow problems. Like you may have different small translations, what I was saying before. It depends, however, in the parts in the license. Some parts are easy to do. Like for example, when we try and translate a word that legally doesn't have a legal meaning, but is similar to different legal meanings. Others that are direct definition, for example, US law, those are more touchy, they're more difficult. Like, for example, consequential damages, all that is tricky to translate. Yes, I think it would be a good thing to have at least an exercise translation.
I'd like to understand how deep is the Linux problem. For that, I have two questions. One is related to the law. Can we have a GPL2 and GPL3 mixed project? What if someone starts to provide modules or source code to the Linux project under the GPL3 version? Are they going to be out? And the other problem is technically. How deep are the headers and that things that can make problems with other projects linking to parts or using parts of Linux? That's the two questions.
So you're looking at me. I assume you were asking me the question, is it right?
You mentioned the problem particularly, but okay. Anyone can answer.
So I'll try. I take that at first, but others feel free to jump in later. I'm told that the Linux problem is not actually. Hello? Is it okay? I can't hear me anymore. Can you hear me? Oh, hello? Okay. So I'm told that there are actually a limited number of Linux developers that actually chose GPL version 2 only. So all it takes for Linux to switch is for these few developers to change their mind. Or to take out all of the code that they have contributed, which is really not much of an option. As for combining GPL v2 with version 3, they're not compatible licenses. GPL v3 has restrictions that the GPL v2 did not permit. So if you create a combined work, I'm trying to be very careful with the language here. If you create a combined work, a derivative of software that is licensed under GPL version 2 and GPL version 3, I understand, and I'm not a lawyer, but I understand that you can do that, but you cannot distribute the result. Because in order to do that, you would need permission. Well, you'd have to be in compliance with both licenses, and this is impossible. So, can lawyers confirm that?
We have open.
Licenses 2 or later?
That's
clear. But
the point is,
I think the question was about combining code that is only version 2 to combining code that is version 3 or later, or only version 3. I think this isn't possible to distribute this.
As far as your question about modules went, I understand that the source code for a module might be released as a separate work under the GPL version 3, in as much as it is not a derived work from the code that is licensed under version 2 only. However, as soon as you create a binary out of that, and if that includes headers, they're version 2 only, and that brings in code or something that qualifies the binary as a derived work from the version 2 code, then you cannot distribute that binary.
I see. What about other parts of a typical new Linux distribution like libc or that libraries? Do they link to the headers of Linux? Do they use it in some way?
No. In fact, it has been a very long-standing debate. Linux developers are very, they dislike very much the idea that userland ever includes kernel headers. So much so that they actually created a project, or some of the Linux developers created a separate project that offers, in the form of userland headers, the kernel ABI. I forget the name of the project, but it essentially defines the data structures and instruction and interrupt. System call numbers and stuff like that, such that userland can interface with the kernel using the correct data structures. But that's pretty much it. I don't know that they have been careful enough to not derive that code from the kernel. I don't know that. I've seen some people just strip off whatever was within ifdef kernel and call that this package. But that is not it. I understand that this one package that has kernel headers for userland, or kernel ABI headers for userland, is a separate project that I hope is developed independently. This is a huge, I believe this is a huge waste of effort. It would be far better if the kernel itself offered headers for userland, but that's up to them to decide. I don't have a say on that.
I think we are a bit running out of time, but we still have some, like 3 minutes, so I think he is the last one.
I guess I'm the lucky one. So a couple of comments. The first comment on GPL version 2 only project. I'm one of the people, one of the software authors, developers, who actually license all their software under GPL version 2 only, even stuff that is totally unrelated to the Linux kernel. And I just want to give some reason on why I'm doing that. And it's the mere fact that I just cannot accept, as an author, license terms which some group might draft in the future, where I have no idea on how it exactly it's going to look like. Yes, I trust the FSF, and yes, I trust that, like the version 3, it's just it's not really a change of license, but an adoption to various changing circumstances and so on. But how far does that trust go? Does it really? I mean, it's like an infinite amount of trust. And even though I consider myself involved in the GPL version 3 process and you know, the free software community and so on, I still don't want to go that far. As soon as I see a new license, I want to be the one who decides on whether I want to license the code under that license or not. So that's the reason for that. I understand there's all kinds of practical problems associated in large-scale projects with lots of contributions of various authors. But still, I mean, that's just a kind of principle decision. Another thing was about header files. To the best of my knowledge, and my knowledge is primarily restricted to German copyright law, is that header files are quite often not copyrightable works in themselves because, I mean, it depends on whether you have inline functions and so on, but if it's just an alliteration of definitions and that kind of stuff, it's not a copyrightable work, so it doesn't really matter if somebody put a GPL version 2 only or whatever paragraph in the license, because it's not a copyrightable work. Anybody, it's basically like public domain. Anybody can use it for anything. That was basically the two comments I wanted to add.
Can I answer the first question? To your first question, you were telling me before about in Germany it was not necessary to translate, right? this would be necessary in Spain. But for instance, for what you're saying now, I have my concerns under Spanish law whether this clause would be legal, because under a Spanish point of view, you cannot leave a contract to the decision of another party, right? You can, for example, limit the interpretation of a contract or the extent of it, taking into account the law, right? But not really a third party or one of the parties in the contract. And precisely because you don't know what this other party may unilaterally, not with common agreement, will decide for you. So I have my concerns. So maybe this answers the question. Yes, in this sense, I think we're common with Germany, not on the first point.
I have a question to you, but...
this is backwards. I'm sorry, I can't let this happen. Go ahead.
I don't really understand what the problem is with the annihilated version, because as I understand it, but I'm not a lawyer, is that this part of the writing is just the offer to the user, and he then can choose which version he wants to take. So if he says, okay, I choose version 2 or I choose version 3, and after that there's no change, the FSS cannot change it back, or the FSS cannot say, okay, you chose to take version 2 in 1999 and now we publish a new version and you have to adopt it. They still can stay with version 2 if they want.
What I mean is not when you say only version 2. I mean when you say, when you admit the clause version 2 and successive, in the sense that imagine you are the initial developer and this code keeps jumping and it comes in version 6. And version 6 says things you wouldn't have agreed. You understand what I mean? Because they maybe, I don't know, maybe you are not in favor of the further requirements, for example, or other things. Or maybe you are not in favor of, for example, the privacy limitations from the actual draft. Probably not, I understand. It will be eliminated. But imagine if this new clause comes back to you and you cannot use that clause for privacy.
Well, I think it's pretty much it, and we can maybe, you know, transfer this, because Pablo, now we have the session of Pablo, we're a bit run out of time now. Sorry, but they were doing like this. Thank you. It's not me, they were pointing, you know,